Hello everyone, I'm Junwu Huang, and I'll be giving the last six lectures. People here call me Curly, most of them. You can call me Curly too if you want, or you can try to pronounce my real name. It's a little bit hard, but you can do it. All right, so in the last six lectures, I will be telling you mostly what is happening, what might happen, what actually doesn't happen in our universe. Okay? So the theme is mind. I do not really care about other universes. Okay? So it will all only be describing what do we know about our universe, and what do we think might be happening either in the early universe or in the universe today? Okay, so but before tackling this question, I will start with some more general comments about the type of things we do as a physicist. Okay, so there are two types of detective work, okay, that we do. To find out what is happening in our universe. And the first type is more about what Mina told you in her lectures, in her first six lectures, which are motivated by theoretical puzzles. For example, the electroweak hierarchy problem, the cosmological constant problem, and many of these puzzles which are related to either small numbers that we do not have explanation for, UV sensitivities that we do not see in experiments, and many other things. And all of these are theoretical puzzles, right? The second type of work are motivated by experimental evidences. So, and here, most of these experimental evidences nowadays come from cosmological and astrophysical measurements. And in particular, for the last six lecture, we'll be focusing on one of the most important experimental measurement from, let's say, 1970s. That is the observation and the confirmation of the existence of dark matter. Okay? So throughout the development of physics as a field, both of these two considerations are important. And in a lot of cases, they are intertwined. You cannot really separate one from the other. But we try to do that in the lectures. And so Mina was mostly doing this. And in the last six lectures, we'll mostly be talking about these experimental evidences. So in order to tell you what these experimental evidences are, I will need to tell you a little bit more about cosmology, because most of these evidences come from cosmology. And you are going to have a cosmology class later in the year by Neil Dalal. Well, but it's too late. So today I will give you a very quick crash course on the most essential things you need to know about cosmology to understand the significance of dark matter, dark energy, and the things we'll be talking about in the last five lectures. Okay? And what this discussion will enable us to do is of both the cosmology and some aspects of some field theory would be allow us to discuss these three things. The first thing will be about BSM in cosmology, and we'll discuss a little bit of abiogenesis. And we'll also talk about dark matter. In particular, we'll be talking about two main types. The first type is called WIMPs, or weakly interacting massive particles. So this is something that I think Mina already mentioned when she was talking about supersymmetry and also split supersymmetry. So the second type, which we'll talk more about Friday and Monday next week, will be about the strong CP problem QCD axions and how these particles can also be dark matter in our universe. So in the last two lectures, I will be also showing you how BSM show up in other systems. And the first system that I will be talking about are stars or stellar objects, which as you will see, gives us very strong constraints on all type of particles that we are going to look, we are trying to look for, especially the light particles of the type of axions. Okay, so and in the last lecture, if we have time left, we'll be talking about BSM in the lab. In particular, I will give you an example of how to build an experiment. And by building, I mean the theoretical way, the theoretical kind. Well, I'm not going to show you how I go to the lab and move like some mirrors. It will be how to design an experiment that tries to look for some new physics with the technologies that are provided by our experimental colleagues in various different fields, including condensed matter, electrical engineering, atomic molecular optics, and all kinds of things like that. Okay. So before I start, let me ask you some questions to get what people have studied before. So how many of you have been to a plasma physics class? No? Condensed matter theory or solid state physics? OK, a little bit. OK. GR and cosmology. OK, so this is just to get a sense of like where I should start for this, the last lecture. But it's OK. All right, so now let's proceed with our first lecture. And we'll be talking about the thermal history of the universe. And the important thing here is, as you guys probably already felt in your QFT classes or almost all classes you learned here, most of them talk about a small number of particles. In the QFT class, you are talking about mostly 2-2-2 scattering, right? Maybe 2-3 processes. They are very little, small number of particles above vacuum. Or in many classes, you are just talking about the properties of that vacuum state. Of course, in cosmology, in the universe, it's not far from the case, right? We have a lot of particles everywhere. We have 10 to the 30, 40 particles like in this room, right? And this is very far from vacuum. And it calls for a different type of description. So in general, like when we are describing this type of system, we use some field theory. And today we'll just be talking about the simplest example, which is the Friedmann-Robertson-Walker universe, or FRW universe. OK, so we'll start by describing what is happening in a universe that is expanding because of the energy density that is inside the universe. So we'll start with a few things. The first thing is the Einstein equation that you all have learned in your GR class, which is basically a relation between the Einstein tensor, which is the gravity side, and how it relates to the T-mu, which is the energy momentum tensor of the matter that is inside the universe. And we'll be talking about, so the universe on large scales is isotropic and homogeneous. And as a result, we'll be working with an energy momentum tensor, which has, which looks roughly like this. So it has a density and some pressure. OK. So there is still a Poincaré symmetry that is, persists. Which is why like, it's identity in the x, y, z components. So and then like we also need a metric. Okay. So and the metric we use has a form like this. Okay, and again, there is a good Poincaré symmetry, but we know the universe is expanding, which is why the scale factor is a function of time. Okay, so, yeah.
When we write the stress tensor like that, are we picking a specific reference
frame? Yes. So we are picking a frame where like a time is just going forward, and there is a clock that is universally moving forward, and the universe on spatial dimensions is isotropic and homogeneous. So that's the direction that we are picking as a direction of time. Okay. Then in that case, like I can write it this way. Of course, in principle, I can do a Lorentz transformation to move things around. Right. Okay. So that's the starting point, and then we can plug in things into the Einstein equation, and then we get to the two Friedemann equations. Okay. So the first one is this here. The second one is something like this. Okay, so the first one comes from the T00 component and the G00, right, which is why like you have a row on the right-hand side. And here, the second one mostly comes from the spatial component, and you have the P on the other side. So here, and we define Hubble squared this thing on the left-hand side to be the Hubble scale squared. Okay, so that's just a definition. So with these two equations that are both coming from the Einstein equation, we can do some manipulations. We can basically solve like the system if we know what is the energy density and the pressure in the universe, right? But we do not want to know like all that detail in this class. So let me do a simple manipulation of these two equations. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take equation one, take a time derivative of it, and then what this gives me is a relation between rho dot, okay, and rho and p. So when you do this time derivative, you are going to have both the a double dot term and a single dot term. And the double dot term you can replace with the second equation, and the single dot term you can replace with the first equation. And what you get in the end is an equation like that. Okay. So the Hubble comes from basically a dot over a. You can check like this is actually the case. Okay. So what does it mean? Well, what this tells you is that the energy density, how the energy density change depends on how the pressure and the density in the system are related to each other, right? And this equation, which describes how these two things are related to each other, is basically equation of state. And in particular, for a homogeneous and isotropic universe, there's only one parameter which describes this equation of state. And that parameter we call W is a parameter which relates the pressure and the density. Okay, and depending on what is the energy density inside the universe, whether it's radiation, whether it's matter, whether it's a cosmological constant, right? You heard from Mina about that. This W takes different values, and which changes how does the energy density change as a function of time, and how the universe expand as a function of time. Okay, so now let's take a few examples for this W parameter and see what's going on. Okay, so the first thing is radiation domination, or just radiation. So here, like I'm looking at a universe which only have some radiation. So you can think of it as a bunch of photons, which are symbolized with each other. Okay, so in that case, the universe has only the energy density or the density of particles has only one scale. There's only one scale, which is the temperature of the system, and we know that the density is a dimension 4 parameter, right? So it goes as t to the 4. Okay. For radiation, this W is equal to 1/3, or P equals 1/3 times rho. So this is the equation of state of the system. Okay. So now, as time increases, with these two quantities, we can plug into this equation to see what's going on. Right. So the important thing is that rho plus P is a positive number. Right. So when no matter for any W, like 1/3, you plug in here, it's a rho dot is a, equal to a 3h times 4/3 times rho. But like the important thing is like this part is all positive, and you have a negative sign here, which means the energy density is decreasing as a function of time. Okay, so what do we know? When time increases, I have rho dot which is less than 0. So rho is decreasing as a function of time. And this, if I'm keeping this relation, what this implies is that the universe is cooling down. OK?
Sorry. How do we know that rho plus p is positive?
So energy density is always positive, right? Rho is always positive. P equals 1/3 times rho. So this combination is a positive, right?
Is there a subtlety with changing coordinates?
Huh?
Is there a subtlety with changing reference frames that would affect that?
I don't think there's a subtlety with changing reference frame. In the case of the radiation, there's a something that is invariant, which is the trace of if you take like t mu nu g mu nu, it's actually a constant, which is equal to 0. Okay, so there is a Lorentz invariant, which is equal to 0. In this case, in some sense, the density is always that enters this equation is always much bigger than the pressure, and both of them are positive. Okay, so coming back to this, time increases, the temperature decreases. So as time passes, the universe is cooling down. And if we go back to this first equation, right, the left-hand side is Hubble squared, the right-hand side is rho. So Hubble scale squared is goes as rho over m Planck squared, right? So this goes as t to the 4 m Planck squared. So this is also going down, okay? The Hubble scale sets the size of the universe, with this equation, what it tells you is that the universe size, which goes as 1 over Hubble, is increasing. Right? So what does this mean? This means that the universe is cooling down, and at the same time, it is expanding. OK? So you can do a more careful job and compute like how does the A, the scale factor, actually change with time. And this is something that I'm not going to show you in more detail. In the case where the universe is full of radiation, the scale factor actually goes as t to the 1/2. And what this implies is that the Hubble parameter is actually decreasing. The A double dot is actually smaller than 0. And that tells you like the universe expanding is actually slowing down. OK, so what do I have? We have a universe. As time passes, it is cooling down, it is expanding, and the expansion is slowing down. And that's the feature of a radiation-dominated universe. OK, so the exact quantitatives are not very important. The important thing is that we know how the parameters roughly change as a function of time. Well, I think Neil will demand more quantitative things from you, like when we take the cosmology class. But for us, it's not going to be very important. OK, so the second type is called matter domination. So in this case, the matter is a non-relativist particle. So the density is number mass times number density. The number density is the total number of particles, or like matter, is a fixed number. And as a result, this density is actually decreasing as 1 over 8, the scale factor to the minus 3, because the number density times volume should be a constant. Okay, so if I'm in a universe which is still described by a temperature, this density would go as temperature cubed. So this would be how the matter density change as a function of temperature. OK? So and at the same time, matter has no pressure, so P equal to 0, or equivalency W equal to 0. OK? So this would be how a matter energy density look like and how the equation state of matter look like. OK, so now we can run the same analysis. As temperature increases, if I'm in a have a lot of matter, for the same reason, rho dot is less than 0, right? P equal to 0. So right hand side is positive. So this is going down. So density is decreasing as well. So matter dilutes as temperature goes down, and we can compute the Hubble square, which is a rho over m Planck square, and it goes as mt cubed over m Planck square, right? And this thing is also decreasing as a function of time. So as time passes, Hubble scale is going down, the universe expanding. Okay. So it's quite similar to radiation, but the important difference is instead of radiation, where the density is decreasing as temperature go down as t to the 4, here the density go down as t cubed. Okay? And this will be important when we try to put them all in the same plot. All right, so the third thing, which won't be not very important for most of the rest of the lecture, is the cosmological constant. But I still want to show you. So in the case of the cosmological constant, W is equal to minus 1. So P equals minus rho. OK? So now, if you plug that into this equation, the right-hand side is exactly equal to 0. Which means rho dot equal to 0, right? Okay, and what it means is rho is a constant, right? And this constant is basically the cosmological constant, lambda cc, which, as Mina told you, is roughly milli ev to the 4. So in this, for this, if rho is a constant, then the Hubble squared, which is rho over m Planck squared, is also a constant, right? And what this means is that a dot over a is a constant. And this one you can solve. Like this is a little bit harder, but like this one you can you know how to solve. And this this implies that a is proportional to exponential of ht, right? So what this tells you is that if I have a universe which is dominated by the cosmological constant, the scale factor increases exponentially. And that's the feature of inflation, for example, the universe expanding exponentially. Or like in the case of today, which is also CC dominated, the universe is expanding like accelerated having an accelerated expansion, meaning that a double dot and actually a to any time derivative is bigger than 0. Okay, so that's how we know that in our universe today, the universe expanding with the acceleration. Okay, so you are going to play with more of this in your cosmology class, but the important thing here is that as time passes, for both of these cases, we'll have density which decreases with time, and the universe will be expanding as at the same time. Okay. Any questions? Okay. So let me play with this. Fancy. Okay. So great. Good. So the those are the qualitative behaviors when we only have matter, only have radiation, only have the cosmological constant. Now we will be talking about universe which has all three of them, right? So the important thing and the important period we'll be talking mostly about is radiation domination. And the important property here is that radiation redshifts faster than matter, which redshifts faster than CC. Okay? And CC doesn't redshift at all, right? So the word is a little bit abstract. So let's draw a plot. I can draw the density of something as a function of time or scale factor. And I draw it in a log-log plot so that the things I draw are actually lines, right? So what do we have? We have three energy, different type of energy densities, and I will need three color chalks. So there will be the first, like the photon. This doesn't look very purple. It looks white to me. Okay. And then we'll draw matter, which redshifts slower. And then we'll draw the cosmological constant, which is a flat line, right? Because it didn't change as a function of time. So when we have three lines, we have that have different slope, right? That all have different slope. We have a couple possibilities, right? So let's just take hold these two lines as fixed. I can have this line either below the point where they meet. We can go through the point where they meet, and I can be above the point they meet, right? So our universe has the property where the CC is below the point they meet. So this point where the three lines meet is called the time of, so here like a time of equality, or the time of matter radiation equality. Okay. And so this happens at a time when the universe temperature is roughly 0.1 eV. Okay. So that's almost also the same time when the cosmic microwave background was emitted in the early universe. So the second point, which is important, of course, is where we are today, right? So this is where we are today. And famously, we know that the universe expanding is going through an accelerated expansion, and the universe is dominated by the cosmological constant. Okay, so this is where we are today. And this point where the matter and the CC cross each other happens not so long ago. This is roughly at redshift of a field. Okay, and this we know because right now, like the CC is roughly 60% of the total energy density. The matter is roughly 20-something percent, while the radiation is very, very small. So this is the pie chart that I'm sure most of you have seen. The universe is mostly dark energy, actually much more than that. We have a little sliver, which is visible matter, right? Which are the matter that make you and me. And then there is this component, which is roughly like 25% of the universe, which is dark matter today. Okay, so now the CC over matter is roughly a factor of 3. Okay, so so this is what happens in our universe. And when we examine it, we realize that it is quite a coincidence, because at very, very early time, right? To the time that we have the first measurement about the properties of the universe, which is the time of BBN, the energy density of radiation is way bigger than the energy density of matter at that point, which is way, way bigger than the energy density of the cosmology constant. So at this time of BBN, the energy density of radiation is roughly some 10 MeV to the 4, okay? So the energy density of matter is roughly 10 MeV cubed times 0.1 eV. The energy density of the CC is milli eV to the 4. Okay. So at that time, the energy density of radiation is 7 to 8 order of magnitude bigger than the energy density in matter, which is also, let's say, 40 order of magnitude larger than the energy density of the CC. But the universe conspired to arrange these three curves to be exactly where they are, such that they almost meet at the same point, but not quite, right? So this is another way to see the cosmological constant problem, because it is small, right? But it is small. It is quite small. It is very, very much smaller than the rest of the two energy densities at the time we have a first view of the universe. But it is not really, really tiny, such that it has some size, such that now it is dominating the energy density today, right? And what makes this more troubling is the realization, first by Steven Weinberg in the 80s, that whether this line is really crossing this point above or below actually makes a huge difference. Okay, and that comes from the fact you are going to hear more about this like in your cosmology class, but that comes from the fact that the structure formation, the growth of the galaxies in the ones that we live in, right, can only happen if the universe is matter dominated. If the universe is radiation dominated, then radiation has pressure and the galaxies won't form. And if the universe is dominated by the cosmological constant, the cosmological constant drives the accelerated expansion of the universe, which tears everything apart, and the galaxies won't form either. Okay, so in our universe, in order for the galaxies to form, we need a short, okay, but non-negligible period of time where the universe is dominated by matter. And that allows Weinberg to actually give a prediction on what the size of the cosmological constant has to be, smaller than that. Okay, so he said that if like the cosmological constant is either here or very close to the radiation matter equality, the universe won't look like the way that they look. So they have to be smaller than something like a milli eV to the 4 or comparable to that. And he was right. After almost 20 years after his prediction, we actually measured the cosmological constant to be around the value that he predicted. And that actually is an evidence of the multiverse type of thinking, which Mina, I think, talked to you about when she talked about a split supersymmetry, right? So, the principle that Weinberg come up with, right, which says that which allows him to predict the size of the cosmological constant, is called the galactic principle. It's an anthropic principle which basically states that the universe, the existence of us to observe the universe requires the fact that there are galaxy formation, and as a result, the cosmological constant has to be tuned to be really, really tiny, much smaller than the energy density of the universe at matter radiation equality. It is a very cool piece of argument, but it is not going to be the rest of the class because, again, we are only most interested in about our universe, and this is our universe. It might just happen to be the way it is. Okay, so so here I gave you another way, a second way of seeing why the cosmological constant problem is such an incredible puzzle, because in order for these three lines to meet, or almost meet, is very bothering, at least for me, and it is much more bothering than the thing that leads us to think a lot about grand unified theory. In that case, all the couplings are order one anyway, and the chances that they are going to be like very close is much less dramatic than the case here, where all of them start to be some size which are like a 40 order magnitude different, right? So that's the cosmological constant problem. Any questions? Okay, so we know a little bit more than these three lines from the measurement of the universe. And here, let me write down a few of those. So measurement that points to ESM. Okay, so there are a few of them. The first one is the measurement of the ratio between the number density of baryons and the number density of photon. And this number is roughly 10 to the minus 10. Okay, it's a small number. And to explain this, the theory that we think about is called our basic theories that give you baryogenesis. Okay, how where baryons come from. Okay, so the second thing which we measured is this ratio between the number density, the energy density of dark matter and the energy density of the synonym water particles, which is roughly a factor of 5. We know that the cosmological constant is non-zero, but so far I don't think like we have any useful theory to really tell us why it is. Okay, so I'm not going to say much about this. And then we have some upper bounds. For example, we know that the amount of dark radiation in the universe over the radiation, standard model radiation, is roughly less than 10%. Okay, so so all of these things we can extract from cosmological measurement. And now let's see why. What we should be doing with these numbers. Okay. All right, so how am I doing with time? Let's see. Oh, okay. All right, so okay, so now in the last 20 minutes, I will be telling you about baryogenesis. So let me start with a new board. Or actually, like not really about baryogenesis, but just mostly about baryon freeze-out. As a test example for what we are going to do next lecture. Okay. So. So here we had this figure, which started from BBN, right? And I start drawing from BBN because that's when we really have the first measurement of something that what we know happened in our universe. In principle, we can trace these lines all the way back to even earlier time and ask what different type of matter would be doing at much earlier time. So here, let me try to do that. So, okay, so this is matter. Okay, so this is a CC. This is again rho matter, and this is rho gamma. Okay, so first, the matter, as we know, contains both the dark matter and also the baryons. So let's ask, like, what is the baryon doing when we trace this line back even further? Okay, so baryon. So what we realize is that the baryons won't remain like matter all the way to the very early times, because at some point, right, let's say like this is BBN. At some point, when the universe has a temperature that is order GeV, the baryons are not a good degree of freedom anymore. And at least they will be relativistic, right? So at that point, they do not behave like matter anymore. They become more like radiation. So this line will eventually, at some point, become more and more radiation-like. Okay? And so now, and we know that radiation has to track if it is symbolized with the rest of the standard monoparticles have to track this line, which is how the radiation behaves as a function of time. So now the question is, what is happening at this point where T is order GeV to the baryons? Okay. So what is happening is that the baryons, when they are radiation, there are almost as many baryons and antibaryons. So at this point, so when T is bigger than GeV, the number density of baryons is almost equal to the number antibaryons, which are almost equal to the number density of the photon. Right. So at the time when the temperature becomes comparable to the mass of the particle, the particles will annihilate with each other and into photons. So what you're going to get are protons plus antiprotons going into various standard model particles, can be electrons, can be photons, right? So in particular, these processes, which in the early universe is because of some equilibrium, goes both ways with the same rate at this point no longer holds, right? And the reason is that when the temperature is much smaller than the mass of the particle, there are less and less of the electrons which can annihilate to each other to produce a proton, while the protons which are around can still annihilate to each other to produce electrons. So this this equilibrium is violated, and the proton density is going to decrease. Okay, so this can be seen better when we work with think about the distribution of energy of the two species. Okay, so for the photon, as you decrease the temperature, you have some Bose Einstein distribution, and the distribution just moving to the left because the temperature is decreasing as a function of time. Well, in the case of the baryons, or in the case of the massive particle, this is not true because you cannot have particles which has energy less than the mass of the particle, right? So now these two curves start to deviate from each other. And as I decrease the temperature, what happens is that now, instead of something like this, I will have something that is lower. But now, if the m proton is here, then the phase space for the photon is even decreasing. And as I shrink even more, this triangle becomes even smaller and smaller. And we know that this part is the Boltzmann tail. So it's like m e to the minus m over t. So the amount of area within this triangle becomes exponentially suppressed as the temperature of the universe continues to cool. Okay. What this means is that, so this combination tells you that the number density of baryons plus number density of antibaryons over n gamma is going to be exponentially suppressed as e to the minus m over t. Okay, as the universe cools down. So then you'll be asking, like, why do we still have baryons, right? The reason we still have baryons in our universe and no antibaryons is because the difference between these two is non-zero, and the baryon sector is asymmetric. Okay, and since baryon number is conserved quantum number, right? You all worked on some tutorial on proton decay, correct? No? Right. So homework. Okay. Then you know that it is very very hard to destroy a baryon number in our universe. So this quantity, so the total number of baryon, total baryon number is a conserved quantum, conserved number, or this ratio between the number density difference of the number density between baryons and antibaryons over the number density of photon is a constant, and that means that the sum, or just like the number density of baryon, at some point won't be able to decrease anymore, right? And it violates this expectation because at some point there are just no antibaryons in the universe for the baryons to annihilate with, and then the number density will become a constant. Well, the number density over the number density of photon will become a constant. Okay, and this constant is going to be 10 to the minus 10. Okay, so what is happening here? As the universe passes through this mass threshold, the density is going to drop exponentially, but it will drop to the point where, like, it when to the point when this difference is 10 to minus 10, right? So that's how the baryon is doing. What about the dark matter? Okay, so similarly, you would say, like, if the dark matter continued to go on this trajectory and it just never stops, it will be something that makes the thing that I was describing to you, right, the cosmological constant problem, or the coincidence these three lines meet with each other, even more and more of a puzzle, right? So, like, as I increase the temperature, I'm increasing the ratio between these three curves. So, so it is possible that the dark matter is just going along this line to as early temperature as possible, right? And the universe, something just sets up the initial condition of the universe such that they have exactly the right value that they almost meet at this point. But that is very unsatisfying, right? Because we need to swallow this this incredible amount of fine-tuning in the initial condition of the universe. So this is a case zero. It's a possibility, but we don't want to have that, right? Because of the reason I told you. What about the other possibilities? Okay, so there is the possibility that the same thing that happens to baryons is also happening to the dark matter, right? So there is the possibility that at some early or later time, the dark matter actually also comes up and trace the radiation density, evolution of the radiation energy density. Now, instead of having three curves, which I'm setting up to do this, I have two curves in the very early universe. Okay, and that is the scenario we call a thermal freeze out. So case one, which is the case where the dark matter was in some equilibrium with the center model, behaving like a radiation, until the time the temperature of the universe is equal to the mass of the particle. And then like it drops, just like the baryon drops. And then like it tracks this curve, which is like a matter, until the point where like a structure formation is all happening. Okay, so there are two types of thermal freeze out. The first type is the type of WIMP, which is symmetric freeze out, meaning there's no asymmetry between the number density of WIMP and anti-WIMP. Okay, so we'll be talking about the WIMP freeze out in next lecture. So of course, there is also the possibility of asymmetric freeze out, which is more like the baryons. And those type of models are called asymmetric dark matter. But here, instead of swallowing all three lines meeting at the same time, you need to really come up with a reason why does the amount of drop here and the amount of drop here, so here is like 10 minus 10, here can be something different, are actually almost exactly the same as each other, right? And doing that, of course, is a tuning of its own, and it's not very present. So I'm not going to talk much about this in the next lectures. Okay, but the thermal history is basically the same as the baryons, and you can do it yourself. So that's the type one, which are thermal freeze out, and the type two. Would be the case where this line at some point becomes a constant, right? So then like it behaves more like the cosmological constant. And this class, the second type, are called ultralight dark matter. Okay, so including all kinds of light bosons. And the prime example of all of these is called the QCD axion. Okay, so the QCD axion has an energy density which almost stays a constant for a very, very long time until at some point like it behaves more like matter. And so we are going to talk about this in the lecture. So this is, will be lecture two. This will be lectures three and four.
In the second scenario, why does it start decreasing after some point? What changes?
So this is something that I will explain, but it is, will be when the Hubble scale of the universe is equal to the mass. And we'll see like why that's the case in lecture four, next Monday. Okay. And this type of production is called a misalignment, and we'll show more details in lecture four. Okay, so there is a third possibility, which that I start with actually no dark matter in the very beginning. Okay, this is also a possibility. The initial condition is just zero, and all the dark matter particles come from standard model particles. Okay, so all the dark matter particles are coming from processes like these, where the dark matter states are just annihilation or decay products of the standard model states in the early universe. And through these processes, I populate a little bit of the energy density in the dark matter, but like because of the redshift like matter, they eventually catch up with the standard model radiation mass. Okay, so this is also a possibility. And this initial condition, this would correspond to an initial condition that the energy density in the dark matter is equal to zero to start with, okay? And this third possibility is called freeze-in. Okay? And I'm not going to say anything about this in the lectures, but you are going to learn from Amalia and Gang in the tutorials. You have a problem to work out. How the freezing process actually sets the abundance for the dark matter to be exactly the right amount that we observe today. Okay, So these would be the different type of ways that we get abundance of dark matter, which matches with observation today. And this three cases, two of them, like we'll discuss in more detail in lectures. And the last one, you are going to do some computation yourself in a tutorial. Okay, so I'm almost out of time, so that's where I will stop. So what do we talk about? We talk about how the we started by talking about how the universe would evolve depending on what type of energy density there are in the universe. If we have just radiation, just matter, and just the cosmological constant. Then we talked about if I have all three energy densities in the universe, what happens, right? We'll have three lines. They all redshift at a different rate. The radiation redshifts the fastest. The matter redshifts like slower. And the cosmological constant doesn't redshift at all. We talked about the another way to see the cosmological constant problem is why does these three lines meet, but almost meet, but doesn't, and how the fact that the CC is a little bit smaller than the energy density and matter ratio quality is of vital importance for our existence or for structure formation. Okay, so then we talked about what the baryon is doing in the early universe, prior to the time that we have any observational evidence for, before the time of BBN. But because we know theory, right, we can roughly trace what they do, which brings us to the question, what are the dark matter doing at earlier time? And I outlined three different cases that could be the what is happening. And so in the next lectures, we'll be talking about each of these cases. And something will be left to you to do in your tutorial. So I think like there will be a tutorial on Wednesday.
Yes.
So in the Wednesday tutorial, you are mostly going to work on something that more related to what Claudia described. You are going to work with mesons, okay? And especially pions. And those things I think are the most interesting thing that you should have learned in your standard model class. So now you are going to do that. On Friday, you are going to, I think, play with either this or something more about the QCD axiom. OK, so I'll see you again on Wednesday.